to talk about is a totally classical process that also takes you from one vacuum to another. Okay? And it is the particular process I'll talk about is a consequence of marble collisions. And I'm a bit surprised that collisions hasn't been mentioned for 1.5 days into the workshop, since they are everywhere and in some sense important. And it's not my main point, but I'll show how important it is by example. So some of us care about something called a census taker. So basically, there's a special vacuum in the landscape that has zero lambda. Someone living inside will live forever and see a lot of things. Okay. So what that guy sees, the census taker sees, is not a boring sea of force vacuum. Now, because near these corners, the volume is infinite. If I have finite collision rate, you're going to get to infinite outer bubbles and come and collide with you. And in fact, near the end, not the end of time, but near the infinity, they're going to see, actually, instead of major zero point that's still staying in the force vacuum, they're going to be dominated by all these collisions. So it is important to understand what the collisions in order to know what does that guy see. So that at least one of the reasons why collisions are important. And the first step is I want to convince you that classical transition is one of the simplest outcomes of a collision. Okay. I want to show you, when you have collision, it is very simple and very easy to have classical transition. So what do I mean by simplest? Okay, let's draw this picture. Okay, and once more, small technical point. Whenever I draw this bubble collision picture, I draw a 1+1-dimensional process. And because the system has SO2-1 symmetry, implicitly there's an H2 everywhere. And the H2 radius at this point is actually zero, and it's growing. Actually, the best time variable in the system. Okay, so there's always an H2. Okay, so when I nucleate one bubble, nucleate another bubble, and they collide, we ask, what is the simplest possible outcome after this point? You might naive say that, okay, since this bubble is a vacuum, that is not necessarily the same vacuum, maybe a different one. And between any two vacua, there must be a domain wall. Okay? So is this the simplest situation? Well, clearly, it cannot be the end of the story. Right? Because you know you're colliding two objects, you end up being only one. You cannot conserve energy momentum just by these ingredients. You must take care of the extra energy here by in some form of radiation and so on. Okay. So that is not a process I like, because you have to go into the microphysics of what happened here to know how to distribute your extra energy. Okay. So that's not the simplest in my mind. The simplest possible outcome, and through this collision energy, is this. Right. When you have two incoming objects, they collide and go into the other two, then the system is exactly solvable. Right. You only have to tell me what is the tension of this one, tension of that one, and something happens. In the middle, we have two domain walls. The middle region is another vacuum. So if the simplest possible thing happens for a collision, then somehow this classical process tells you you can go into this new vacuum. So that's the classical transition. That's one way to think about it, but I'll show you the mechanism later. It turns out that thinking about energy is not exactly the right way. It's a twist. Okay. So it is simple, but we also want it to be realizable. Like, we don't want this to be just a simple case in my dream no one cares about. So to show you that it is realizable, I'll give you three different models. But the first one, just to shock you with how simple it is. I'm telling you, in this model, you have two vacuum with A and B, you will have that. In a sea of force vacuum, A, you nucleate two bubble. Well, in this case, both of them has to be B. And they collide, you get this. Well, you have no other vacuum to put it back, so it has to be A. And this is what happened. And this is nothing new. This is actually discovered by Hawking and Stewart in the 80s. Very old paper. They did basically numerical simulation and found this. Well, it's more general than this. This is the one special example in their paper, but you just need two vacua in the simple potential to have that.
Is that the end of the story, or is that some further?
Okay, yes. That's not the ultimate end of story, because you know A is the Bose vacuum, A is higher than B, and so these two domain walls, they have to accelerate and back. Something will happen in the future, but that is a different time scale. So what I'm talking about, at least at this step, for classical transition, is some local mechanism that controls this collision, the outcome of the collision. After that, well, you have to accelerate, and in this particular case, you have to come back and close it. But I'll give you more example that it doesn't have to do that later. Okay, so this is a simple example, but I'm not happy with my example yet, because this is too simple. It's not a landscape.
So, I mean, there's a lot of parameters, parameters and potential parameters in terms of when the collision occurs.
Uh-huh.
Does the outcome, depend on the parameters?
Yes, okay, so the outcome depends on, so when I talk about this outcome, I'm thinking about very large boost.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, in a boost large enough, I can ignore the H2 curvature.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be really that large, but as long as you have a large boost, this one can happen. And it does depend very little on the potential, but on boost alone. Okay, so I'm about to mention my next example. So the reason I don't like that is because it's not similar to a landscape. So I now will give you something more similar to a landscape. But I need to get the citation right.
You're going to tell us some more details?
Yes, I'll tell you why this happened. Actually, I won't tell you why it happens here, but I'll tell you why it happened
here. Something similar.
But also not this one. Okay, so the next example is given by this paper, some of the authors in the audience. Okay, so this is paper by Jose Blanco Pilato and Delia Strauss-Kurloff and Alex Galanki, who is somewhere there. Okay, so this is everyone's favorite toy model for landscape. You have extra dimension. You have some extended large dimension. Okay. The three dimension we have. And time is suppressed because I'll evolve by hand by erasing things and drawing new things. And this extra dimension is compensated by flux. Okay. And I'm going to take the point of view from electric flux, where the flux line threads through the extra dimension this way. It'll be convenient for me later.
You just have one extra dimension? Or
well, it can be any dimension. In the particular example, it's two. But it doesn't matter. In the particular example, it's a two-sphere or a circle. But detail doesn't matter. Okay, so this is the model of some toy model landscape, because the flux number are quantized, and flux is a reason to stabilize extra dimension. So if you have four flux, you get one vacuum. Have three flux or five flux, so those are different vacua. So this is a toy model landscape. In this model, how do you first think about quantum tunneling? How do you quantum mechanically like do the Coleman-Deluca? It turned out that the Coleman-Deluca process is due to a Swinger pair production. Imagine all these flux lines. Somewhere you break it and use the energy in the flux to make this electron positron. And in the field background, these two will then accelerate away from each other. That is exactly the case of some bubble nuclei that move away. Right. Outside, you have four flux, so the outside is vacuum four. And inside, because you break this one, you only have three fluxes left, so this is vacuum three. Okay, so this is the nucleation process. And then I want to do a collision. To do that, I'll have to nucleate another bubble here. Okay. And they're moving the same way. And since this guy here is not going to collide, I'm ignoring his motion. So let me follow the motion of this one and that one. Okay, so negative charge move this way. Okay. positive charge to move this way. Okay, so the space-time now looks like this region, four flux, three flux, two, three, and four. That means what happens there after collision is four, three, two, three, four. So it is realized in this simple toy model, the landscape, and for a very simple reason, because I'm assuming the charges, they just kind of ignore each other. They don't do anything.
But you could dial parameters so that they would smash into each other, they would attract?
Yes, well, the argument in the paper is that imagine a model where you have these charges, they have initial size, they come from wavelengths. If that is much smaller than the size of the extra dimension, and then your extra dimension is kind of symmetric, then there's no particular reason that the charges want to occupy the same portions of the extra dimension, so they won't meet. On top of that, you might think they attract each other, right? But this domain-wall acceleration is still more about responding to the background field as a whole instead of their mutual attraction. Right? So the attraction itself will not bring them close to collide or something. But, well,
but they would collide if they're going slow enough, but if they just get going fast, they'll miss each other.
Yes, but if they are going fast, the reason that their acceleration comes mostly from the background overall fluxes instead of the mutual attraction. But, well, there are other things that speaking with this picture. For example, there will be geometric back reaction. Like the extra dimension doesn't want to be that large, you have less flux, and so on. So there are effects ignored here. And we can talk about how realistic that is if you are more serious. But I think we can summarize why this happens, why the classical transition happens. It's basically because these two domain walls, they want to ignore each other. When they collide, really nothing happens. And the natural result of nothing happening is a classical transition. Okay. So this is only the second model. Now I should come to the third one where I was involved. Okay, so that's some things, but we're ignoring a lot of, well, the realistic interaction. It's a heuristic argument. And I'm going to give you a third model that I have to name my collaborators, which is discovered in this paper by, sorry, no, that's the same paper. This red. 3 months later, by Richard Easter, Hans Goodlin, Julian, Len Quinn, and Eugene Lin. Okay. And there are two other follow-ups by finally me, joining the group. And Nehemiah Johnson, sitting there, introduced me. Okay, so what are in those paper, a different model, has that behavior and with explanation is, well, very similar to this one. Too similar to this one. It's this. Okay, and you know, now I'm happy I have a third factor to put in, as can be seen. So it is first realized by numerical simulations, vector simulations even, so that when you collide two bubble fees, they just take you to C. And the reason is not complicated. The reason is the following. Okay, of course I don't mean an arbitrary potential. There are some constraints, but come from the reason. Right, the reason is that you have to think about, think like the computer who is solving the simulation. Okay. If you are a human, you might think complicated. Okay, so this is a system. I have some particle excitation. I have some soliton excitation, and they interact in a complicated way. But computer doesn't think that way. For computer, everything is simple. You give it an initial collision problem. Right, phi, so on your x, which initially looks like this. So I'm zooming in on, say, this portion. This is 5B. This is 5B. 5A. Right? And these are the domain walls. And they kind of move in toward each other. That's the initial condition. And the computer is still going to solve the equation of motion for you. And what is the equation of motion? It is this. Yeah. And well, there's a piece that suppressed by the H2 curvature. I'm taking that to be large. So this is a very simple equation of motion. So how does the computer solve this? Well, I solve it locally, point by point. In this region, it's trivial. All three terms are zero. In this region, it's also trivial. The only non-trivial part will be one, this moving domain wall. Okay? And you realize that when this domain wall, when they are nucleated, they'll be accelerated. And eventually, if I insist on taking large H2 radius, they'll be highly boosted. Right? So there'll be a large gamma factor. That means this term, scale by gamma square, and so does that term. These two terms are huge if you ask the computer to solve them. So the computer will think, well, my most important mission to solve this equation is to guarantee that these two are almost the same. And whatever left over, I'll use that to cancel with potential.
So we were wondering, you left out gravity, is that because every all the scales are below the Planck scale? Are you just not describing it?
Okay, so I'll include gravity when I care about the motion of the domain wall afterward. But in all of this, I'm thinking, well, this is a local physics, I shouldn't care about
gravity. Large enough boost, you'll make a black hole.
In H2 symmetry? In perfect symmetry, I don't think we'll make a
black
hole.
Okay.
If I have three things collide and focus on a point, that might,
okay,
might have a black hole this. So, the computer thinks very simply. You have the most important thing is to make sure this is satisfied. And then V is the secondary business. Therefore, solving this problem is like solving a free field equation. Basically, ignore the potential. That's the zeroth order approximation. And then you worry about, okay, I have to make my potential happy. And that has a consequence that I have to erase. I solve that equation of motion, pretend that it is a free field equation of motion. My solutions are simple. Basically, my solutions, phi, as a function of x and t, can just be some function, which is a function of this. This is the solution to a free field equation. In particular, for me, well, I can add any number of them, by the obey linear superposition. I'm going to combine these two. Basically, each one represents almost the step function. Although the realistic, in real life, you have to care about how does the field interpolate between the barrier, between the vacuum, the barrier. But when they're highly boosted, they just look at step functions. So basically, the solution is just two step functions. One moving to the left, another moving to the right, superimposed.
Aren't they accelerated?
They are accelerated, yes.
Oh, but we're just interested in the...
In a short instant, we're about to collide. Okay, so this is a good solution. You can keep impulse that, keep increasing time when they collide. And our mission is to make this still a good solution after they collide. Okay? And that is simple, because we know when they collide, this happens. This is 5B. 5B. Right. Oh, it's too good to make them two different pictures. What's the stick? Okay, so when this one moves to the left, it is step function. Right? So it guarantees that you have a step function here, which is that one move from right. And the value here is going to be 5B. Subtract. You just inherited whatever you had before, a step function. So our mission is to make the computer happy, right? This is done, if and only if that is C. Right? Because the condition that my computer is happy is that the solution in the middle region is again trivial, that all three terms are zero, which is guaranteed by this choice. I just have to make, basically, a separation, this separation.
So you're choosing a potential to make a simple story.
Yes. That is the only condition. Right. By this reason, you know, as long as I guarantee these two spacing to be the same, you have this.
The gammas are going to swamp whatever shape in the potential.
Yes. Yes. Right. You can modify this to be something
right,
ugly. Right. But that is a second order effect. Yeah. After they collide, your domain hole profile has to self-adjust to the new potential it's looking at.
Well, maybe you don't care that it goes straight to a minimum. I mean, could it end up
with energy
in there? Right,
yeah, because
I think it could.
Yeah, you don't have to be exactly there.
Yeah, because your first argument then seems that your first point seems to be that you could ignore DVDFi entirely during this process.
Well, that's not necessary. I mean, that is not true when you are in the flat part, right? You're solving that highly boosted, or the flat part doesn't know the solution is highly boosted.
I thought you were using that as you cross them to say they
didn't
interact.
In the instant that they crossed, they didn't interact.
Yeah.
But after that for a while, the potential will be important. And this condition is there to make sure that the important part doesn't ruin the
that will be propagating
across
the
window.
Well, so are you saying, so suppose you're off from C.
Yes. Suppose
then they'll be sloshing.
Right.
Then there will be.
But will that, are you saying that's going to propagate into the wall and
pile
up on the wall?
Okay, so if you have a small deviation from C, this is what you see. You see some wobbling here, but it's controllable. It's still kind of accelerating from C. If you are kind of have a large deviation from C, then it's possible that you actually get back to A.
You
like the various.
So why not just let it be exactly C?
So for convenience, let's say exactly C. But once you fix that, you still have a lot of other things to adjust, right? Because this is the only condition. So you can. The only condition that tells you, you can make the very, very high or very low. Same thing still happen. Right. What's going to change is that afterward, or the velocity when you get the wall, the outcoming wall, become very massive, then you have to be slower, just by the usual collision, you can calculate that simple problem. And if you become lighter, then you can be even faster. But that won't affect the fact that you get a new vacuum, you get your cosmic incision in the middle. Okay. So, on top of this, right. The barrier is not the only thing you can adjust. You can also adjust the position of C. Okay. Yeah. And it also doesn't care. Right. So that for the collision mechanism, all it cares is this two equal separation. You can go to vacuum C, which is even higher than B. That is totally possible. Of course. If you think about gravity, that will have some implication about what happened afterward. So I'll give you a little bit of implication. So it is possible to collide A, B, next C, locally, with VC bigger than VB. See, even a higher vacuum. And you know, if this is higher, typically you get this acceleration come back. But because if this is still a de-Sitter space, it will be inflating, and you can choose the parameter so that it survives. The coming back doesn't enclose the entire future. You actually see a piece of future infinity of that de-Sitter space. And that is still true. See, I didn't specify where my zero is. My zero can be here. So that is still true if your B are linear spaces where they're crunches. They can crunch. But by this collision, you can escape that crunch and end up in a region where these future decision. If you just look at the picture, you might think this violates some theorem about the universe in the lab. Okay? It doesn't for the following reason. Remember, there's H2. There's an infinitely extended H2 orthogonal to the blackboard. So in order to apply the universe in the lab, you need to enclose this one universe in the lab, we can see, by the sphere that is totally in B. Right? Then you can show that C cannot be higher than B, but it doesn't exist. Because H2 is extended to infinity, you cannot form a closed S2 that encloses C but only embedded in B. Well, you can do that. You can close everything in A. That's why the necessary and also I say the sufficient condition is that VC has to be less than VA in order to see a piece of future infinity of it. But it doesn't care about V. It's too chaotic. Blackboard.
Can you explain once again why VC should be cannot be greater than VA?
Oh, because I want to. This is the universe in the lab principle. That if I have S2, so S2 locally is in a vacuum. Okay, and things inside S2 cannot be a false vacuum to where my sphere is. I cannot make a universe out of this inside the S2. Okay. So if I surrounded the entire bubble collision structure where in the sea of false vacuum that is A, I can construct an S2. And that disallows any future infinity that has CC higher than A.
But if I am in a false in the theta vacuum A, mm-hmm. I can tunnel to another the theta vacuum C, which has higher energy.
Ah,
so how is this different?
Okay, so the difference is that in that, so comes the ugly truth. Every downward nucleation, if you include gravity and think about finite size of the bubble, the geometry is discontinuous here. Geometry is perfectly continuous there, but you really don't know what happened here. For downward tunneling, and because we can make bubbles small, we can ignore that side of it. We still live very happily. For upward tunneling, we know the initial region has to be bigger than horizon size. You have a bigger than horizon size discontinuity in the metric, well then a lot of theorem doesn't apply. So if you think about upward tunneling from A to C, yes, in principle that can happen. But I don't know how to draw a continuous geometric picture for that. And this theorem only applies to draw a continuous geometric picture.
It is a continuous metric, except it will have regions with violations of weak energy condition.
Ah, you can do that too, yes. If you violate weak energy condition, you can also have C kind of thing.
Okay.
Okay. So hopefully these three examples shows you. It is interesting. And remember Adam told us yesterday that it is impossible to tunnel from B to C, since B is ADS, it's conscious. So if your landscape looks like this.
That's it. So this is all about C up.
It's about
you move C up.
Yes, it moves C up. Sorry.
Raise up, yeah.
Okay. But not higher than A.
Not
higher. Yeah. All right. Good.
Okay. Okay. So you cannot quantum mechanically tunnel there, mm-hmm. because something forbidden. But you can still go there.
Awesome.
And once in a while, people believe there are islands in the landscape because of this kind of situation. They are kind of they cannot talk to each other because tunneling is obstructed. But you can still go there through a classical transition.
So I don't think what you're saying is quite fair. If it's true that you can't go from B to C mm-hmm. quantum mechanically, but you also can't go from B to C classically. The reason you can do this is because you're in a background of A.
A, yes.
And you can get from A to C quantum mechanically, and as we've seen classically.
Well, quantum mechanically by which rate? Right? Because I can foresee this rate is just the square of my A to B tunneling rate. Right? I only need to make a two bubble. But the other mechanism you think about to tunneling directly from A to C, avoiding this, would that be more important than this one?
So you are thinking this might be the fastest way?
Yes, it might be the dominant way too.
Some
I mean, there's a totally fine-tuned way to go from B to C, to set your scalar in motion.
Get
above the barrier before it crunches. Is that a possibility?
Sorry?
Can you just make
fine-tuned
initial conditions?
Give it a push.
Over the barrier, over the barrier,
classically. You mean like give a homogeneous
field
configuration with...
Yeah. And of course you have to do that faster than it would crunch, and I guess maybe that's... Is that impossible?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think they've been trying to think of only local configurations.
Yeah, what I said is fine-tuned. There are other ways to catalyze.
Yeah, I don't know about the global moving field process. I don't know whether that's...
I think when you're saying that you can't get from B to C, what you mean is B is something with ADS boundary conditions, and then there'll be some obstacle to doing what you're trying to do. But if you just want to make some region of B, then you can definitely do less.
Mm-hmm. But it's not really a region of B, because you're putting a lot of kinetic energy. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a region of negative CC. Yeah.
With lots of
it's
not really ADS, right? It's not really ADS.
Well,
so
neither is that. It's crunching is not ADS.
Okay, so next I'll talk about the more speculative part of this talk that I'm most excited about. Okay, so I'll show you a few examples and show you that sometimes it might be useful. But what I want to know is actually more ambiguous, is what if this is generic? What if your universe, the collision in your universe obeys this? Or what if your landscape is designed to have this almost everywhere? And let's talk about the first question about the universe. If your universe is basically coming from that kind of landscape model, right, or if you prefer to draw effective potential, something like with perfect equal spacing and dropping downward, I can label vacuum 1, 2, 3, 4, or 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. I start with this false vacuum, which is 0 everywhere. If that is my model, then I'm guaranteed to be able to be very lazy. Whenever I draw new collisions, I don't care about what I mean in a collision, they just are future life forms crossing each other in any way they like. And this makes our life very easy. Because, well, if I ask which vacuum I'm in, I pick a point, say, which vacuum I'm in, you just have to draw the vacuum like home and count how many nucleation events there was. But it can be either in this case that one nucleation followed by another. It can also be some guy here that there were two nucleations and they collided. Totally equivalent. Right, so which vacuum you're in, number of nucleation events. Right? And this is so convenient that Frank Fraggle and Mac Levin wrote a paper before this is discovered. Okay? They wrote a paper that calculated basically the correlation function you should see either on the future infinity or maybe on the census taker boundary. Based on this assumption that collision is just simple counting, they don't interact. And they give you some important clue about what is the CFE going to look like. And I can imagine if you're trying to remove this kind of assumption, the calculation will be very hard. Okay, so this is how useful it might be, right? If the classical transition is true, not only true, but generic for the universe. It gives us a convenient way to think about the CFT, the possible CFT. And the truly speculative part is the next. If this classical transition is true for the landscape. Right, so that is some space-time structure. But when we talk about landscape, it's really something about this. Right? Does the landscape somehow arrange the position of the vacuum in a way that favors this process? Right? And the landscape is not a single field potential. It has hundreds of multiplied fields. right? And there are subtleties when you have more than one field. So imagine you have two fields, picture. And here's my favorite force back in A. Imagine you nucleate a bubble B, which is probably that vacuum. Imagine you nucleate another bubble C, which is somewhere else. Right? And you might naively think that, well, the necessary and sufficient condition for my classical transition is, well, I do a parallel transport of this there, that here. I demand that D, position D, is a vacuum, or very close to a vacuum. So by the same logic, well, that should be enough to guarantee this goes to D. And of course, if you just parallel transport this, that may not be the exact path for the domain wall, but it's going to readjust itself. It's a sub-dominant issue. So the main condition comes from condition of the vacuum position. And just look at this, it seems like if you want this to be true, the landscape, the vacuum position in the landscape, need to follow some Lattice structure, which we might be able to check. But that is a bit naive still, because in doing this, in writing a simple parallel transport argument, I'm implicitly assuming my kinetic term looks like this. I'm assuming my kinetic term is canonically normalized. And with mutable fields, they are not guaranteed to be that way. In general, your kinetic term looks like this. Right, this is some Taylor metric of your field space. Right, this is the generic form of your kinetic term. And
why does it have to be a Taylor?
Well, it doesn't have to be, just some metric. It's a metric structure for your field space. Right? But as long as you have more than one field, you'll be non-trivial. So you cannot just say it's a simple parallel transport rule. And we can try to write down what the rule is. And it is surprisingly simple. But it's simple, but I don't recognize it. So I cannot just parallel transport. But some rule, if this becomes trivial, go back to parallel transport. This is an equation like this. So I'll first say, so to get the position of D, what you have to do is to solve a two-parameter equation phi as a function of phi A, it's a vector equation, a function of U and V, two variables. From in this line, so this is U, that's V. In this line, they're going to put AC. So at this point, vacuum A. This line is this domain wall, and this is C. There, you're going to put B. And you're going to solve the following equation, which is important, so I want to have a nice position to write it. You solve this equation. Looks utterly familiar. You solve that equation in this two parameter space. And this is the point where D is supposed to be. Okay? And I'll be very grateful if anyone tells me what that equation is, because from the form, it must be something. It looks, okay, the gamma is just the connection you get from that metric. Okay. And this, if you forget about U and V are different variables, this is just a geodesic equation. But now it's some kind of mutation of geodesic equation that.
Wait, what does it have to do with this? This is some equation.
Sorry?
This is some equation. Now what do you do with this equation?
Oh, okay. So you have three vacua, A, B, and C, right?
Yeah.
And you want to know when these two collide, what does it demand
about D,
position of D on the field space.
Right.
So you make your phi A, which is a vector, as a function of these two variables. You plug in this as this initial condition.
You're plotting that.
Oh, I see.
At this initial condition.
I see.
You solve them.
Yeah.
This point is where the estimated to be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in these two dimensions, you have a two-dimensional problem. Whose target space is this metric, right? These are the equations for mass that fits with target space is this metric. This is the same as the equations of motion of a strain.
This is exactly the equation we were saying.
Yeah, whose target space is this metric.
And
this is like the minimal surface in minimal two-dimensional surface.
In two dimensions, yeah.
Does it have any like special property to help me see how where to position B? For example,
the computer, you said the computer does it.
Okay. I'll give you an example why this is confuses me. Because, well, I'll give you an example. Because it doesn't give me simple behavior. It doesn't give me any simple behavior. Right, so, indeed, we solve it by computer in some special case that I hope I can get a simple answer, which I don't.
He's saying, so finish up after this one.
Okay, very fast. Example, imagine your two-dimensional phase space. It's a two-sphere. Okay. And this is your A, this is B, this is C. And the condition you put in is just big circles, square lines, straight lines. And you solve by computer. The answer for D is not there. It's not here. It's some weird place in between. I don't know how to get that by without the computer. And furthermore, the path becomes kind of entangled in that way. So it's maybe that is a very simple equation, but to put that into an intuition of like a general rule of positioning my thing, it looks awkward. But that's, I think I'm over time, so that's all. Thank you.
In the talking Stewart case, why did it go back to A rather than jumping farther in the direction?
I see. Okay. Yes. That situation is a special case where when you monitor when the computer is solving it, the field goes to somewhere there and almost exactly given by this. But then instantaneously you realize that, oh, that is a very high thing, it's not a vacuum. So it kind of bounces back and comes to A. Okay? So it's not exactly follow the same logic, but it's the behavior we saw.
But then that's the character. So why does it stay in A?
What do you mean, why does it stay in A? Oh, because it's like a reflection. Okay, so.
Well, it depends on the details of the potential, right? If the potential had been very shallow, then eventually.
Well, no. Still actually, no. If the potential is this.
I thought that was the most provocative thing you said in the talk.
If the potential is this,
yeah.
It still comes back to A.
It overshoots.
Oh, because of the gradients.
Because of the gradients. If the potential is that, it still comes back to A. Because it overshoots.
What's so special about A?
Well,
because that's
A is the same separation when you run everything backwards.
It just wants to go back very fast.
And it reflects. Then that delta is still part of the picture.
Another way I like to think about it is that natural is lazy, right? You have that much energy. And you already know you can put those energy into the solid and they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to do anything else. Just put it back to the solid.
There are these funny shaped solids that have an extra
liquid. You mean you have this? They're still happy.
Can you explain why it has to be this location that you find by all these constructions very close to a vacuum? This D has to be very close to a vacuum.
Yes.
I would have thought that it should be somewhere in the basin of attraction of the vacuum. So you get there and then you go down to the vacuum.
It depends on what your tolerance about the basin of attraction. Because there is a gradient term. Right? Like, that is actually related to the example here. Right? And so that is quite flat. But the collision, it will come back to A. Because when they collide in an instant, there's a strong gradient and want to pull it back to where it came from. Right, so it's not only the usual percent of traction like if you have slower inflation. It has to be stronger than that. It's not like you're only allowing a free homogeneous field to roll down there. You want the peak of some package to stay there. So
So it is stronger than the usual sense of Bessinian attraction, but that is a qualitative
I mean, this is very pretty, but doesn't it seem too good to be true? I mean, all you have to do is boost these things, and then you have this very simple free field dynamics. I mean, couldn't I dial something or other to make it so that these domain walls like to interact strongly at high energies?
That's something I'm looking into right now. But you can have other kind of solitons in a sense, and you can simulate and collide and see what happens.
It is generic, but high energies the interactions turn off.
I have a kind of related question. Some of these fields might, I mean, we take a warped compactification seriously, some of these might be brain motion, and then the DBI action kicks in and boosts things.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that setup, your kinetic term is never much more important than the potential, so you never ignore that.
Well, I'm saying it's the form of the kinetic term is different in an important way. So.
Yeah,
so. That's
so
one thing. But that's
yeah. So if the kinetic term still can get very large, much more important than potential term, I believe this still happens. But it cannot. It's bounded above somehow.
Well, it's interacting. The kinetic term, what we're calling the kinetic terms, that are interacting. So.
But aren't you assuming the interactions are, I don't know, asymptotically free or something like that? When you say that you assume the kinetic stuff that dominates it, that...
Well, what I mean is actually, if you have like DBI action or something, you can spend that. And there will be leading order in gamma. And the most important thing will be solving those things leading order in gamma. Right. And if that part follows this, the others are just like the potential here, you know, the second part of it.
Let's thank
Yixing
again.
They just don't have something there.